If there is one instrument that has consistently defined the sound of country music, it's the fiddle.
Not violin, fiddle. From the first country hit by fiddlin' Joe Carson up through the latest recording by Alison Krauss, there's always been a person putting bow to string. As our series Honky Tonks, Hymns, and the Blues continues, Paul Brown bends an ear to the instrument that some call the devil's box.
It could make seductive sounds that prompted God-fearing people to do sinful things, like dance.
If a fiddler could cause someone to sit up and start dancing, people felt like the musician had a lot of power, and people were scared of that.
Mark O'Connor caught glimpses of that old superstition when he was starting out as a teenage fiddle champion in the mid-1970s.
I saw many, many of the older fiddlers with rattlesnake tails inside the box to scare away evil spirits and things like this. And so that's in my lifetime.
As a child, Alison Krauss studied classical violin. These days, she's a bluegrass star. So, what does she play? A violin or a fiddle?
You know, a friend of mine say, tomato, tomato, or mater.
Etymologically, they actually are the same word.
Alan Jabour is both a fiddler and a scholar of traditional music. He says the origins of the instrument and its name go back to 16th century Italy.
And it spread up through Europe, and it was called violino or violine or violin in English. And viol is actually the same word as fiddle, slurred over a little bit.
Right. Viol, fiol, filil, fiddle. Whatever you call it, the instrument made its way to the United States via the British Isles. But Alan Jabour says it's a mistake to think of American fiddling as simply a hand-me-down from ancestors across the pond.
The old-time style of Southern fiddling is really cousin to the old-time style of Scottish fiddling and the old-time style of Irish fiddling. Maybe we're the younger cousins, but we're the same generation. So we shouldn't think of everything as just an echo of the old world. In a way, we were all part of the same musical and cultural revolution.
The call to arms for 20th century fiddlers came in the summer of 1922, says Mark O'Connor, when a fellow named Eck Robertson raised a fiddle to his chin in the New York studios of Victor Records.
Eck Robertson really defined the modern fiddler. His recordings in 1922 helped put fiddling on the map as something that could be American virtuosic music.
These sessions have gone down in history as the first commercial country music recordings. Historian Alan Jabour says that over the course of 2 days, Robertson recorded 10 songs, including an enduring classic.
The most famous one amongst fiddle players is the recording of Sally Gooden, a simple little tune, almost a kid's tune, that he turned into this elaborate theme and variations. And every fiddle player in the South and a lot beyond the South listened to that recording and said, "Wow, I've got to try to do that too."
By rights, Eck Robertson should have been the first country music star. But for reasons that have been lost to history, he did not enter a recording studio again for another 7 years, allowing a down-home showman named Fiddlin' John Carson to get all the glory.
Now I'm getting old and feeble and I cannot work no more. That rusty plated hoe I've laid to rest. Oh, Marcus and old mistress say I'll sleep inside the guy. But there it's now I roaming with the flesh.
Fiddle and John Carson's 1923 recording of the little old log cabin in the lane went through several pressings in order to meet an overwhelming demand. By one estimate, one in five Southern households owned the record. A few years later, fiddle bands were all the rage. One of the most popular was Gid Tanner and his Skillet Lickers.
Well, folks, here we are again, the Skillet Lickers, red hot and ready to go. We're going to play you another little tune this morning. I want you to grab that gal and shake her foot and moan. Don't you let them dance on your new carpet. You make them roll it up.
The Skillet Lickers sold hundreds of thousands of recordings in the 1920s and 30s. The group featured a front line of two, sometimes three, fiddles played by such celebrated musicians as Gideon Tanner, Burt Lane, Clayton McMichen, and Lowe Stokes. Their sound anticipated bluegrass by two decades. Merle Haggard, who plays a bit of fiddle himself, says the instrument's appeal was understandable.
The fiddle was an instrument that could play two notes at once, one against the other, and also set the tempo. So it was like three instruments in one. And if you had a good fiddle player, better yet, if you had two fiddle players, you almost had a band.
But in the late 1950s, the Mater became a tomato as Nashville sought to shed its backwoods image in favor of a more citified sound.
Is it really over? Is this the end?
The so-called Nashville sound was intended to take country music into the more profitable pop market. By the early 1970s, a backlash built up steam. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, and other outlaws wanted to take the music back to its honky-tonk roots. Others wanted to go back even further. When a 13-year-old Mark O'Connor stepped onto the stage of the National Old Time Fiddlers Contest in Weezer, Idaho in 1975, he was one of only a handful of young players there. Last year, half of the 350 contestants were under the age of 18. While O'Connor is encouraged by the renewed interest in traditional sounds, he says it took some of the older musicians a while to accept the young blood.
I remember when Alison Krauss first came on the scene. A lot of the traditional bluegrass bands were very frightened at her success because she was going to get all the attention, but she didn't really play traditional bluegrass, and she might give the, quote, wrong impression of what the bluegrass band's supposed to sound like, right? But nobody's complaining now.
Alison Krauss says when you get down to it, it doesn't matter whether you're playing modern or traditional music, or whether it's being played on a violin or a fiddle.
I always think that bluegrass music and like house music, like club music, are really related. You know, with the backbeat, it's so strong on that it makes you want to get up.
Makes you want to roll up the carpet, shake a foot, and dance to the sounds of the Devil's Box. For NPR News, I'm Paul Brown.
More Alison Krauss and Merle Haggard at NPR.org.
And our series continues next week with Bob Wills, the Texas Playboy.